It's the Brad and Britt cast. We're glad you're with us here. We're live in the 1:30 Eastern hour on Hump Day.
Hey, yeah.
Halfway to the weekend.
For those of you that have joined us live, what a treat. You've already been entertained. We haven't really even started the show yet. And you've already received incalculable talent as far as entertainment goes.
Yeah, sure. Okay, here's the list.
I'm right.
How stupid are American voters? I can't read my own writing there.
No.
Wow. I can't read that one. I don't know what that one is. All right. It's a nice start. Don's plane clips wings on runway.
Oh, boy.
WBZ's Dick Summer. It's not the debate, stupid. Trump versus OJ and Trump versus Lucky Luciano.
Let's do the debate stuff first, because that's breaking news the morning of this recording on May the 15th, 2024, the year of our Lord. The two combatants have agreed so far to two debates, and I'll let you take it from there.
First one will be on June 27th on CNN, which is pretty early. Donald Trump told Caitlin Collins of CNN after Joe Biden had said, yes, the answer is yes, I accept. And then in the class, I mean, this isn't even wrestling level snark and crap back and forth. It's too stupid to talk about. But the most important thing about this, is there will be no audience of hyenas. Donald Trump loses in this case because he plays, as you know, to the largest crowds in the history of crowds. He plays to the audience. He goes for the zinger. He goes for the cheap shot. He uses that to his advantage in the debates that we've seen him in so far, whether they were the primary debates from many years ago or the general election debate against Biden. Of course, he bombed in that first. He went nuts, and even an audience couldn't save him. He was so crazy. But I think that's a big deal, because there hasn't been a presidential debate without an audience since the first ones in 1960 with Kennedy and Nixon.
So what you're telling me is, and I don't know this, I haven't read this, so they're just going to be in a studio with the two of them and the moderator and the camera operators and stuff?
Yep. And okay. Now, we've seen these, particularly in like the governor's races and the senatorial races in North Carolina. They always do them seemingly at WRAL studios or
I think WUNC, they have the public TV station. They have like this antiseptic warehouse kind of thing.
Right. And so what does that do? That places a premium on your material, on the substance. It downplays the theatrics, the atmospherics, the bullshit. It does. Now, if you get a good one in and the other guy stands there slack-jawed, it's a win. But I think that's a big thing that the Biden side got that to be one of the rules here. No audience.
So one of the most fraudulent things that we've ever seen, and it's been going on, I guess, my whole life, the fake town hall format, that's not going to happen at all in either of these debates.
Well, they're not debate. That isn't a debate. They're not doing town halls.
The town hall style debate, for example, when he was stalking Hillary, which I think that debate was in Denver, that was a town hall style. There were people around them and you would have the people with the pre-screen questions going, will you blah, blah, blah. And that was a town hall format. And it's been used in presidential debates going back, I know, all the way to Clinton. I don't know if it was used in the Dukakis. I don't know if it was used in that particular year, but it's a town hall style debate. So we're not doing that.
I don't know if it was used against Dukakis, but remember 4 years later, that was when George H.W. Bush was caught looking at his watch.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
Just because they call it a town hall style debate doesn't mean it was a debate. This is not that at all. There is no audience. There are no people except, you're right, the camera operators and the producers and the moderators, whoever they may be.
Yeah, I think you're right about that being a big win for the Biden campaign. If Trump doesn't have the adulation or he doesn't have anybody to kind of give him an attaboy or any kind of reaction, he's
now. It would be fair for Donald Trump, kind of like a support animal, to have in there, say, Tommy Tuberville or Mike Johnson or Ted Cruz. So he needs a little bit of support. I think we could give him that, don't you think?
Can we talk about that for a moment? I mean, I don't want to veer terribly off topic.
No, it's okay. I did that on purpose.
The idea that these douchebags are lining up 2x2 like they're going on the fucking arc. Hi, Mike Johnson. And they're going up there and they're wearing the red tie and they're just, it's like a rotation. Who's going to be there tomorrow? It's like someone has died. Who's going to bring the casserole to the Smiths tomorrow? Are you bringing the casserole? Do you have some sloppy joes for the Smiths on Thursday? And they're going up in this courtroom like a bunch of dunces. J.D. Vance and Tommy Tuberville, like the smartest senators. I mean, I'm not complaining about that. The brightest people in the United States Senate. And then Mike Johnson, who apparently loves the Lord so much that he goes and stands up for a guy that cheated on his wife while his wife is, by the way, going through postpartum. And the guy sleeps with a porn star, which, by the way, totally happened. So Mike Johnson, being the godly guy that he is, has to run up there to Manhattan. Somebody said MSNBC. I think it was on MSNBC. One of the reporters goes, Trump is going through their talking points and crossing out, don't say this, do say the stuff that these idiots are going to say when they go outside and talk about how awesome he is and what a travesty of the American judicial system this is.
Boy, are you desperate. You'll reach for anything, won't you, to tar this great man.
Who are the douchebags that made the cut today? Who had to fly up to Manhattan and kiss his ass today? I didn't even see.
Well, there's no court on Wednesday, but it's back in session. Yeah. It's back in session on Thursday, and Michael Cohn will be back up there. And I was 100% confident before Michael Cohn testified that no matter what he was doing on social media or putting out TikTok crap or wearing T-shirts that had a picture of Donald Trump in prison garb or whatever, that this was going to be his moment. And he had, in my opinion, the best trainer possible. Burgess Meredith is dead, so we can't use him, Mick. So he had Lanny Davis. Lanny Davis, Seth Davis's father, who's been a Washington lawyer for 50 years and was the guy that shepherded Bill and Hillary Clinton through their worst times. And he knows the game. He knows what to do. And he's capable of telling Michael Cohn 5 ways from Sunday, this is how you behave in court. You do not take the bait. And Michael Cohn did not take the bait on Tuesday. And unless you believe that Trump's third-rate lawyer crew, and they're a third rate crew. They're not the best of the best. That guy that stands next to him, you see every time during the breaks, the lunch breaks and that, who's standing there like a statue. That's his lawyer, number one lawyer, Todd Blanche. Unless you think that Blanche is holding back the good stuff for the final day of the defense, getting their shots in at Michael Cohen. He's just going to collapse. He's just going to jump out of his chair and try to. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Okay, and in the end, unless we get a hung jury, unless we get one holdout or two holdouts, I think he'll get convicted, which will eventually get us to Trump versus Lucky Luciano. When you're ready for that, are you ready?
Well, hold off on that for just a moment, because okay. I mean. Just a couple more thoughts about these doofuses flying up to Manhattan and kissing the ring and kissing the ass. As useless as the two senators from North Carolina are, Tom Tillis has been persona non grata to Donald Trump and the Trump team, what would you call them? I don't know, the entourage. He's been persona non grata to them for a while. And Ted Budd, our other senator, appears... I guess his strategy is to make people completely forget about him. I think that is the Ted Budd strategy, just to disappear into the wallpaper. Do you think that's fair?
I don't even know who you're talking about.
Ted Budd, as useless as the two guys that we have in Washington, at least they're not, as of right now, flying up there to kiss his flabby ass.
They're not trying to be vice president. They're not in the running for vice president. Those other people are.
I mean, the irony, of course, is that what happened to the last vice president? Oh, yeah, he tried to have him killed. Oh, yes. Yeah, let me run to grab that job.
Oh, like that would happen again. You know that.
We're going to have Pop-Tarts for breakfast. We're going to have Pop-Tarts.
My favorite takeaway line from Michael Cohen was at one point when it was being pointed out that he was ready to do anything for Trump. I'd take a bullet for him, blah, 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 blah. And I don't have it written down. I should. But here's the paraphrase. I was knee deep in the Trump cult.
There you go.
And that described everything. And that describes these people that you're talking about, the Tubervilles and the Vivek Ramaswamy types, who are all going to New York and wearing the uniform, you know, the dark suit with the red tie, dressing up like Bobsy triplets and quintuplets, to try to curry favor with Donald Trump, that idiot governor of North Dakota, right? Doug Burgum. My God. Remember, all of these people at a certain point in time denounced Donald Trump in the most vivid and articulate of terms, whether it was after the Access Hollywood tape or after January 6th, and they've all decided that their future rests with this man. And we've said it once, we've said it 100 times. It doesn't matter when, but it will end in tears for you. We can't tell you at what moment, but it always does. Name somebody for whom their prospects out in the world have improved because of their relationship with Donald Trump. I'll wait for your answer.
No, I can't. I can't. And there's no one within his family. There's no one within anything that has had that happen. No, that's all been downhill.
Oh, by the way, I just saw a piece about Barron. Apparently he's got a cult following already of, you know, chicks and weirdos and God.
Hope he takes advantage of every opportunity. I'm just, again, looking forward to his decision this fall. This is the most awaited thing since Bronny, to figure out where Bronny was going to take his talents.
No, he's not saying that. He's not saying that he wants to play with the old man. He doesn't care about it. He could be right. He could be telling the truth, because he's just not a top level talent, he'd be thrilled to be number 10 on the bench on Sacramento, you know?
He should be in the G League. He should play in Greece. He should play in Israel. He should play in Turkey. He should play anywhere but the national. And I love it when all of a sudden the kid gets getting criticized and LeBron goes, hey, 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 can't you just let a kid be a kid? Like they're the ones that have heaped all this expectation and everything else on this guy. It's not our fault. But anyway, back to Donald John Trump and the court case. I don't know. The embarrassment of having these guys, and I guess you can tell who's in the sweepstakes by who's showing up. Like Carrie Lake has not made her way to Manhattan yet, correct? She's not, because she's probably on the outs right now, right? She's probably not on the list.
Well, there's probably a calculation by some of them that they shouldn't do exactly what everybody else did, and that sets them apart. Or it's hard to get inside the heads of these people and what they're thinking when they're trying to suck up to the boss, as he was known. It's just unlike anything we've ever seen. It's true. We've never seen that at this late hour that people would participate in. This is the definition of a dog and pony show, isn't it?
Isn't it? To say the least. God.
And by the way, the dog show was the Westminster dog show the other day. That was the real dog show.
Even the dogs are like, have some pride. Can't you guys? Well, it kills me. Do the Lucky Luciano thing, because you're dying to do it. I can tell you're chomping at the bit, as it were.
All right. This is some reporting by a couple of people at Slate. 1938 mob case. It was the People versus Lucky Luciano. Remember, he was one of the heads of the five families in New York. And, of course, it was also about a family business. And this is the golden age of mobsters. And the ruling against him, because remember, the Trump technique, as you've heard a million times, is to keep his fingerprints off of everything. And he doesn't write emails and he doesn't do texting, right? And he even has said, according to Michael Cohen, I don't text because, and I don't use email because they can always get it and have it come back at you, okay? Which is a technique he learned from Roy Cohn in the pre-electronic era, but no notes. Roy Cohn took no notes. And anyway, so Lucky Luciano, the mobster, was not in direct contact with all the people doing all the dirty work for him, the murders and the bootlegging and the whole enterprise. But guess what? He was found guilty. And the ruling was that if one person in the conspiracy is guilty of something, if you can be connected at any level to that conspiracy, you are as guilty as they are. And I would submit to you that the evidence shown the last couple weeks by David Pecker, the National Enquirer guy, and by Cohn and by Stormy Daniels even, certainly connects Donald Trump tangentially or circumstantially to the plot, which would have not existed without Donald Trump. That's got to be another thing. You know, would there have been a bunch of crime in Chicago in the 1920s and 30s without Al Capone? No, he's found guilty of other things. But so I don't know whether that's going to be brought up by the prosecutors at the closing arguments to say, well, here's a case from 1930. They probably won't do that. But certainly the judge knows of these kinds of cases and knows this kind of history. And I find it kind of interesting from the old history doesn't repeat itself, blah, blah, but it rhymes, you know. We'll see. The People versus Luciano, the People versus Donald Trump. We will see how it comes out. So All right, Britt Whitmire. How will this case be decided? Will Donald Trump walk? Will he be convicted? Go.
I think he's convicted. I was having this discussion with someone last night. My ultimate fantasy is the judge makes him serve one night in jail, and then it's 2 years of probation. And see, I don't know if you have probation like that, if that's going to inhibit him going on these campaign appearances and stuff like that. I don't know. I'm not sure how that would work.
Kind of probation is, if it's being remanded to Mar-a-Lago, you can't leave there. Chained to the Golden Castle, as it were, then yeah, he couldn't go anywhere. But
that'd be hilarious.
Yeah, I would like to see that. Never a bad idea here.
Would he have to wear an ankle bracelet? Would also be like another unrealistic, but a fantastic thing to think about as far as him wearing an ankle bracelet and being geofenced into some area. That would be funny as shit. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I would enjoy that. Now, and you could have, I was just looking.
You could have Ted Cruz go down there and rail against what an injustice this is, that this man's not able to go out and he doesn't have any resources. How is he going to eat? How is he going to do anything? It's just the worst thing that's ever happened in American jurisprudence history.
Yeah. And we do, in the end, we really do have to blame the people that vote for Donald Trump, the people that support Donald Trump, the people that turn a blind eye to Donald Trump, the shocking percentage of people for whom January 6th not only never happened, but even if they are reminded of it, they don't think it's much of a big deal and it is not a threat to democracy. And why are you bringing this up? And the number of people for whom, and there must be several million people directly affected who had relatives who died in 2020 and 2021 from COVID and the early tepid response by the government, which was led by Donald Trump. It's as if that never happened. I mean, did 3 years after Pearl Harbor, had Americans forgotten about that one? in 1868, had Americans forgotten about the Civil War? I don't know. In 1966, had Americans forgotten that Kennedy was assassinated 3 years before? No. But now, and I guess this is the result of, I don't know, social media. You got to blame social media that whatever is happening today, the beef between Drake and Kendrick Lamar, that's important. That's what I care about. That's what I care about. And all I know is there was no beef between those two guys when Trump was president. Right? There was peace. There was peace in the rap world.
I brought all the black people together. They weren't trying to kill each other. They weren't talking about anything. I was a salve to the black community.
Yeah.
We all know it.
Now, I don't think there's any way that he's going to be fully acquitted like O.J. Simpson was at his criminal trial. Remember, O.J., it wasn't just a hung jury. It was, they said there just wasn't enough evidence at all. And everybody voted to let him run. Question. OJ never really recovered even from that acquittal, right? His reputation was shit because people knew he did it.
Yeah.
And I guess you could still find some people who say OJ didn't, but very few, very few.
Right.
And in this case, if Trump gets a hung jury, 11-1, and he runs around and lies about the fact that he was acquitted, which he will do, he will instantly turn a hung jury into full approval for everything that he ever did, everything that was ever done in his name, and for the corruption of the entire justice system, for which he would like to be in charge of again, because he did such a great job the first time around. But does Donald Trump suffer the same loss of reputation which is impossible because what is his reputation that OJ had? OJ did have a great reputation up until the moment that he killed his wife and Ron Goldman. So I guess I'm asking kind of a dopey question here because we've watched 8-9 years of this where, you know, the bullets bounce off of him like Superman because he's that good and the people are that stupid. Brit, here's how stupid Americans are. 20% of the folks polled believe that Joe Biden is responsible for the overturning of Roe versus Wade. That's right. 20%. Is that possible that that many people? I believe it is true. I believe people are so stupid, so uninformed, so uneducated, so disconnected from reality that they could be told that because Joe Biden was president when the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, the Dobbs decision, right, that it must be Joe Biden's fault. Okay, Joe Biden took away women's rights.
It's reminiscent of like, I don't know how long ago this was, but a few years after 9/11, there was a number of Americans, if you polled them, who said that Saddam Hussein was responsible for the attacks on the World Trade Center. There was, you know, that sort of shit would happen.
Right. But at least, as ridiculous as that is, at least that was because there was a concerted effort to lie about that.
Correct.
The Bush administration. There's been no effort to pin the overturning of Roe versus Wade on Joe Biden. Donald Trump, in fact, brags about the fact that he did it. Yet, 20% won't even give him credit for that. That is just the most frightening thing I can think of. And it doesn't augur well for Joe Biden unless they can, you know, get some sense pounded into some people's heads, because that might be enough to mitigate the advantage that Joe Biden has on the abortion issue, which he still has. But if you slice off a bunch of people who, quote, blame him, that's trouble. That's real trouble.
The Republican Party has muddied the water ever since this thing came out. They've gone between celebrating to wringing their hands to going through the thing right in Arizona. And then they, you know, were trying to get it overturned, didn't want it overturned. They finally were able to get that 1864 law overturned. So they've kind of muddied the waters in that. Yeah, we love it. Nah, we don't love it. Yeah, we don't think it goes far enough. Yeah, kind of goes far enough. We think the state should definitely have control of it. And, fuck you, anybody, any woman that's born in the state of Mississippi, just figure out how you can move.
But I think you're right in that if you're really uninformed about this, you don't pay close attention. All you hear about is this terrible law from 1864. And in Arizona, thank God the legislature got that finally knocked out. Because, you know, under the Joe Biden presidency, look what's going on. You know, you can just see how they can confuse and lie and gaslight people. And you don't have to get everybody. 20% is a nice number. And let's say it's off by a factor of two. It's only 10%. That's still enough. That's still enough to cause trouble. Still enough to cause trouble.
I mean, do you really think there's obviously there must be a percentage of people that think that Joe Biden was responsible for that 1864 bullshit in Arizona? I mean, there has to be somebody that.
Well, because, of course, he was a young man then. no, he wasn't in Congress at that point.
No, but he was somehow responsible for, you know, making, you know, the law of the land as it is in Arizona or was. Reverting back to this thing that was, you know, an 1864 law.
It's so just
there have to be the Americans
facts
that
don't matter
that.
Here. The facts don't matter.
And if you're explaining, you're losing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the deal.
Yeah. All right. We have a little good news today in the wonderful world of inflation. Grocery prices only jumped 1.2% last month. Food inflation is now back to pre-pandemic levels. That's right. But what does that mean? Does that mean that suddenly prices are back to pre-pandemic? No, that's not going to happen. That's not how it works.
Correct.
And Britt, all I know is that the Red Lobster in Greensboro is still open, so we better go there and get our endless shrimp before that one closes down.
Let me just ask, have you ever visited that Red Lobster as a patron?
Yes. Yes. This is a true story.
When was the last time you visited that Red Lobster as a patron?
Sooner than you think. Not as far back as you think. This must have been about 5 or 6 years ago. Our daughter, Stephanie, was in from Chicago. And she says, yeah, I want to eat at Red Lobster. And we said, why? Because I just want to. So we went. I only spent 3 weeks in the hospital after that. And I got right. No. It was okay. It was okay, but of course not okay enough for us to ever really want to go back there.
Meanwhile, down the road in Burlington, the one in Burlington is closing. And Burlington per capita, I would still maintain, is one of the most heavily restauranted cities in America per capita. And it's pretty good real estate where this is. And now the consternation has begun among the locals. What's going to go there? Are we going to get a cafe? Will Raising Cane's come to town?
See, but again, isn't this Joe Biden's fault? Restaurants can't make it in this country now because of Joe Biden. Remember everything that goes wrong
among me and my friends, when something will happen and it's just entirely ridiculous, we go, oh, thanks a lot, Biden. And it'll be something that there's nothing, and it's a joke, but to America, it's reality. It's reality. I went out there, I tripped on the sidewalk, and I busted my face. Thanks a lot, Biden. My brakes are out of my car. Thanks a lot, Biden. You know, it's just shit like that.
Yeah, but I don't understand. There have been Red Lobsters, I guess they started in about 1968. So you know what? That's a pretty good run. That's more than a 50-year run. And where in the Constitution does it say that restaurants that are open should be open forever? They must always be open. They can never. Sure. Come on. That's just a churn. That's churn in restaurants. We see it all the time.
It's one of the most difficult businesses you could ever get in on a chain level, on a local level, or on any level. And I guess Darden spun them off a few years ago, and now these geniuses are trying to deal with it, and that, you know, that it works in some places, it doesn't work in others. I think you're right. That's the restaurant business, period, full stop.
Yeah. Now, as you get granular and you get down to mom and pop kind of places, it's even tougher on them than it's ever been. Cause you know, when the guy who makes the cartons that you do takeout in raises his prices 35%, you're screwed. What do? You can't raise your prices 35% overnight on your restaurant. So I understand that, but this hand wringing over Red Lobster, which apparently did themselves in with the endless shrimp promotion. Ugh. Okay. I don't see McDonald's doing endless Big Mac promotions where, you know, one price and you can keep eating them all day.
Who's the executive that gets that thrown around his neck like an albatross? Way to go, Steve. Good job with that endless shrimp. You fucked us. Nice work. Clean out your office right now, asshole.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things. I think Red Lobster is one of those things where people are comfortable more with the idea of it than they are with it in practice. So, oh yeah, I like Red Lobster there. And maybe when they go and they're in Walmart, right, they see the Cheddar Bay biscuits, they see the mix on the shelf and they might make them like once in a great while. But again, I don't think it's a restaurant people visit on the reg, as they say.
All right, hang on. You're on a desert island and there's only two restaurants, Red Lobster and Fuddruckers. Where do you eat?
I'm going Fuddruckers. I mean, it's a better – I'm sorry. Because first of all, I'm on an island. I can get seafood anywhere. And second of all, I don't know. I have an emotional attachment to Fuddruckers because that was a real treat for us when I was a kid. They had one in Asheville, and Mom on occasion would take us there. And it was the best thing ever because you could go in there and you could get your own your fixings for your burger or your taco salad. And that just made you feel – so I've got an emotional attachment that I don't have with Red Lobster. Although, again, I'm not going to – I'm not shitting on Red Lobster. Red Lobster's fine. I took my mother there for Mother's Day 10 years ago, 8 years ago, and we had a great time. But, you know, as you say, all good things come to an end. I can't head over to Montgomery Ward's and sit down in the cafe and watch people go by anymore either. This doesn't happen, right? Can't go over to Brindle's and see what the latest sale is on an alarm clock. Just, it doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. I'll see you over at Ivy's later. Southern still, department store that no one has heard of outside of the South. But
after 10 years on the radio and 10 years podcasting, you still do have the Brad and Britt Show. We are still here and stubbornly bringing entertainment information to a thirsty world.
Yeah. Neither rain nor snow nor stem cell transplant can or get chemo. In the way.
This guy comes through chemo for you people. You understand?
Yeah. Oh, so here's my latest. Here's a good result here. I went into the hospital on April 2nd. So what is today? The 15th. So that's 30 plus. That's like 45 days, right? Mm-hmm. And at this moment, 97% of my blood is the donor's blood, which is what they want to see. They want to see that happen. Right. Yeah, changeover. You know, that doesn't mean that, doesn't mean I'm done with anything. In fact, no, I'm going to have a slower recovery than other stem cell bone marrow transplant people because of the nature of my myelofibrosis, which, to put it in layman's terms, I'm like a teenage mutant ninja turtle because I had an inexplicable mutated version of this disease, and so it's slower to be completely knocked out, and then it's slower on the uptick. But this is all good stuff. So I'm pretty happy about it. They're still treating me good over there at Wake Forest. All right, last thing, I want to talk about a guy that I worked with 40 years ago. It's a radio geek alert. It's a radio geek alert. Yeah. A guy named Dick Summer. Dick Summer just died. He's 89 years old this week. And if you're old enough to have been a dial spinner late at night, you probably heard Dick Summer on WBZ in Boston. He did the all-night show there for a long, long time. And 40 years ago, he was doing the morning show at WPIX in New York. And lo and behold, my partner, Mike Morin, and I got hired to do the morning show on WPIX New York. And they were going to bump Dick Summer to the middays. All right. So here's Dick Summer. So 89. So he was 50 years old then. Okay. He was a veteran. He was a star then. And here comes Brad Krantz and Mike Morin, two idiots. Okay, who've never really worked in major market radio. It's true. And they're giving us his morning show. And he could have been the biggest prick ever. He could have tried to undermine us. He could have been just a shit. He could have been bitter. He was the nicest guy ever. He did everything he could to help us. And with the egos that we have worked with, Britt, over the years in radio, he really stands out. And you won't find a bad story about Dick Summer, and you'll never hear a bad story from Dick Summer. You wouldn't have, because he was the ultimate storyteller on the radio. He didn't do a political talk show. Oh, what a flop, huh? Right? What a bad idea. But he survived all the way through. And By the way, he had good reason to be bitter because we sucked and we got canned in 8 months. So do you think that he got that morning show back? No. They hired this other idiot who was horrible.
Well, you're not trying to intone that perhaps management was lacking at that radio station, are you? Because I would hate to hear that.
Do I really have to do things I promise not to tell here? Farewell, Dick Summer.
See, I went through when I was being told rather loudly by the radio industry, which I had been in from the time I was 16 until I was about 44, when I was being told rather loudly by the radio industry that they didn't want me anymore. I went through all of the stages of grief, of all that anger and bargaining and depression, and you know, eventually you get to acceptance. And what I came to understand and what I've is that being in that business gave me so many opportunities and had so much fun. And I got to meet people I never would have met. I got to do things that I never would have done. And like you said, being exposed to this guy and getting to know this guy a little bit, that's another great experience, despite the bullshit over various stops. And that's the stuff that you take away eventually, is that the positivity from, you know, all of the stuff that you went through, is that it was great to meet those people, not only the people in the industry, but also the fans and people that were tangential to everything. So that's cool. Was he on after Larry Glick? Wasn't Larry Glick the night guy at WBZ? Or when was Glick on?
Well, you know, you're talking about a 50-year period. They, you know, one guy wasn't on for 50 years, so it was different people. I mean, and he was a huge national voiceover guy on commercials. We used to joke with him because even back then he had already been doing the voiceovers for Cheese Combos, and he had this delivery that was Cheese Combos, they're delicious. You know, it was great. Cheese Combos. You know, that was like the pretzel with the cheddar cheese in the middle of those still around.
Yeah, Combos, absolutely. They got pizza flavor. They got cheddar cheese. Yeah. They got all kinds of different ones.
Yeah. All right. So that's the update. Back to court on Thursday. By the way, and I know it's late in the day for us, but I checked. For just $500, we could fly up there and appear in front of the courthouse on Thursday. We could get out of here right when we're done and get up there. What do you think? You got a red tie? Do you have a red tie?
You know, I will wipe my ass with $10 and $20 at a time for DraftKings. I will not waste $500 to go up there to stand 500 yards from Donald John Trump Sr. Just
all right, let's drive. Road trip.
No.